And we are back here on Unusual Sources 93.3 CFMU FM, broadcasting to Hamilton at 93.3 on the FM dial and the rest of the world at our new website, which is cfmu.ca. That's right, cfmu.ca. It's really awesome. It has everything on it with podcasts and Twitter feeds and pictures and stuff. Even our own program, Unusual Sources, has its own podcast section with new images for some of the programs, some of our unique new interviews from this season. So you can check it out at cfmu.ca. We're under the shows or programs section. Anyway, I'm joined today by Olivier Lopez. Hi, Olivier. How's it going today?
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, Olivier is the equity or an equity mobilizer for a very special campaign that's going on, and it's called We Own It. And Olivier has been telling me all about what's been going on in Ontario in an anti-privatization campaign. And when I heard about this, I just knew it had to be on the program. I think this will be the first of a series of interviews. We're going to have panel discussions because it fits right into our program's goals. As people know, we're a labor-friendly program. We like to give a voice to labor in Ontario, especially if it's a big campaign that concerns the whole province like this one today. And more than that, of course, we have Doug and his connections in the city with municipal activism and reform. And I'm really excited to think about what we can put together on this. But, you know, to learn more about it, we will turn to Olivier because he's been involved heavily in a whole wide range of activity right here in this city. And there's a campaign about preventing the privatization of our public services. So there's a lot that could be said about that. But Olivier, I guess I'd want to start by thinking about what caused this campaign to start in the first place, because I know that the We Own It campaign is involving labor, unions, community organizations, NGOs, and so forth. So, I mean, why did this thing get started?
Well, there's obviously, we are all aware of the privatization of our public services, our public assets, for example, our hydro, our healthcare, the sell-off of LCBO to allow them to sell in alcohol and grocery stores. It's just, it's a strategy, obviously, that the government has been deploying, and it's having an adverse effect and an extreme effect on every Ontarian in our community. So I think it's extremely important that we raise awareness, engage our community so they're aware of what's going on so they can make informed decisions in the future when the elections come, and lobby and approach your government, your MPP, to protect our public assets, because we all depend on them and they are the building blocks of our Canadian society.
Yes, we've all been guinea pigs in this experiment called privatization. I know in the UK it's got its big start with Thatcher, and in the United States with Reagan, and here in Canada just a few years later with Mulroney and the successive government. So many of us have been living most of our lives in an environment where privatization continues to grow and expand, even though it's finally starting to meet some resistance and pushback, and we can talk about that. But there's some big things in Ontario have been privatized, you know, right from the south tip right up to the north, different kinds of things, but the same kind of issues. I was wondering if you could maybe tell me about some of the cases of privatization of our utilities or other enterprises that have happened in Ontario, and maybe some of the results.
Yeah, so this campaign, it really takes a look at the impact of privatization and the adverse effects, right? Public services in reality and historically have been proven to be safer, higher quality, more affordable. The public accountability and the money generated goes back into public services. A perfect example is here in Hamilton of the wastewater services that were privatized in 1994 with a promise of job and infrastructure development. 1996, we had the worst sewage spill in Hamilton history after it was privatized. The private contractors accidentally overflowed our sewage line, which resulted in the worst sewage spill in Hamilton's history into Hamilton Harbor, which costed Ontarians $2.5 million in cleanup. After that happened, the community lobbied and the public services were restored in the wastewater system that resulted in $5.5 million in revenue in addition to the quality going back up to where it should be for the citizens of our community.
So once those services were restored into public administration, it became cheaper and more effective.
Yes. Essentially, that is a perfect example here in our great town of Hamilton of how public services are better.
Well, I think that is an example of what's called insourcing, when something that has been previously outsourced to a private corporation is brought back into some form of public administration. But I guess what I'm saying here is this is not some obscure abstract issue when we talk about privatization of utilities in Ontario. I mean, it happens right here in Hamilton. We have stories of privatization in Hamilton. I think I remember that sewage backup. It was in the Spectator. And I mean, the infrastructure is a huge issue in this city. But after that that spill in 96, it was brought back into public administration. And, you know, I just got to take a step back and in terms of the campaign. We own it. You know, it's great. I love it because you have all of these resources for We Own It. So if people want to find out about the campaign, for example, it's on the internet, it's on Facebook, but there's also these booklets, big booklets, little things about private examples of privatization and also how it's being resisted and how public utilities can be very effective, things that you can give out in different languages. So you're going door to door. We'll talk about that. But I mean, you can scroll down your Facebook feed and it'll pop up, right? We Own It. And that's really great because I think that, you know, if you want to reach people and talk to people about a serious infrastructure issue, you're going to have to use multiple channels. I know you're all, you know, deeply involved in that, but the Hamilton thing is just one example because the literature that you've been giving out, these booklets and everything that's been used to promote the campaign, refers to other cases. I think Walkerton was running them, right?
Yes, and that's another example of the safer services that we end up having when we keep services public. They privatized the wastewater testing or the water testing services there. And as a result, we heard about it in Walkerton. There was 2,500 who ended up being sick and 7 dead, which is unacceptable. You know, we are taxpayers, we are citizens, and we deserve to have quality services. And as a result of privatization, when you move away from focusing on the quality of services and you start considering private stakes and private investors, what becomes your priority? It comes down to profit and generating revenue.
Right. I think that's a big common thread running through all these issues, because you know of examples that you can refer to of privatization in Ontario. So public utilities and highways and all these things being turned into private corporations. So they're being turned into that administration of a profit-making entity, which has all sorts of consequences. So, I mean, how do they sell this? Because a lot of things in Ontario have been turned over to the private sector. So what kind of justification do they use when they're privatizing something like the 407 or, you know, water treatment facilities?
Well, if we look at the 407, for example, they sold off the 407. That is $1 billion in lost revenue each year. And if you think about the 407, it doesn't need much. It just needs maintenance, mainly in the wintertime when the weather conditions are bad. So that's not going to cost, you know, the Canadian citizens and Ontarians money. The argument around the privatization is, in reality, it's to balance the budget. Corporations obviously know how to do business better, and they want to, or they're saying they want to eliminate unnecessary costs. But in reality, for example, the ETR, it wasn't an unnecessary cost. We're losing $1 billion in annual revenue. And that's just one example. I have many more that I want to discuss as well.
Right. So basically, I mean, we've heard the sales pitch. Anyone that's been living in Ontario since the 90s or so, you know, we've heard it. So they'll say, well, you know, the public sector is inefficient and bloated. And if we just turn this over to a corporation, they run things like a business and it becomes more efficient. And then the cost less and you get more value for your dollar and there's less burden on the tax system and you get better services. But of course, the information you've collected on privatization, even in terms of the 407, right, it shows a different story, because you're making, actually you're losing revenue that was coming to the public sector. So that's one issue. But also there's problems in general efficiency with the hospitals and nursing homes and care facilities that have been privatized, universities, schools, and so on.
Yeah, the medical lab tests, those were privatized. The medical lab tests originally cost, it was $22.70 for a medical lab test when it was under public. And then they privatized, and it went up to $33. That's just for one medical lab test. When you start looking at the larger numbers, you look at the medical lab test when it's been privatized, it's $175 to $200 million of unnecessary costs that we are incurring as citizens here in Ontario. That is an unnecessary expense. If we keep it in-house, we're saving money.
Basically, there is a theme and a story that's being told in the campaign, and it's that Ontarians were told that, yes, privatization would increase efficiencies, reduce costs, have all these positive effects, but we've had time now to try out these ideas. And of course, it hasn't worked in the way that it's been sold to us. And certainly, I know you have examples and information to draw upon. So there's a number of ways we lose out when a public service is made private. But on the other hand, of course, there's advantage to have these various services, infrastructure programs under public administration. So, you know, in your view and in terms of what the campaign is talking about, why would you want to see things under public administration?
Well, under public administration, it really comes down to accountability and the quality of services. And in the end, the money generated from public services goes back to the government and our public services that we all depend on in our society. For example, in 2014, first we had the Auditor General of Ontario reported that $8 billion private contractors overcharged in 74 projects and infrastructure construction. Fortunately, having that type of oversight, we have an ability to actually see what is going on behind the scenes when things are privatized. If you privatize it, you're reporting to the CEOs. And those CEOs are only, you know, going to share as much as they choose to share. They don't want to tell people how bad this privatization system is failing. You know, they want to paint a picture that it's a positive thing because you want to keep the money being generated and coming in. When you're losing avenues of or areas of where you can profit, you're going to start looking at different areas, which is public services, because they know there is a lot of money to be made.
Well, I'm getting a couple of thoughts here on that issue. And the first, of course, relates to accountability, as you say. So you hand over a public service or institution or infrastructure, a highway, a medical research center, whatever, to private administration. If it's being run like a private business, and that's how they sell it to you, right? They're going to run it like a business. Well, then you don't tell the outside world how you're running your business, right? That's not how businesses typically operate. The facts and figures and documentation is internal. So the public doesn't always know what's going on. And then they find out later, of course, that there was $8 billion of overcharging across Ontario, like we found out in 2014. But you don't get to see inside. But a publicly owned corporation or infrastructure project is at least accountable in the sense that, first of all, there's a government administering it that can be, you know, recalled electorally. People can vote it out of office if they're dissatisfied with its infrastructure direction. And there's also oversight and things like that, that there's accounting offices. And so there's that accountability angle. But on the other hand, of course, you have the fact that corporations need to make a profit. And in order to make a profit, they try to cut costs and they try to offload onto externalities and they try to remove themselves from things that are not profit centers. So what you end up seeing is something that used to be publicly administered might have covered all of Ontario if it's, you know, a mail services or some other, maybe a clinic, medical clinics. And now when it becomes private, they say, well, those rural clinics are costing us more money than they're bringing in. So forget about them. We're going to close them down.
Yeah, and that's the scary part of it, right? You have, for example, the 3P partnership, the William Osler Center, that had been that ended up being sold off, and it's costing $500 million too much for us Ontarians. That it just, there's no sense and there's no logic around why we're going to incur more costs. If we say that this is going to cost us less money, why are we incurring more costs? An important thing I wanted to bring up as well is the LCBO, and people aren't necessarily aware or understand the benefit the LCBO has being under government oversight and being considered public. The LCBO generated $1.9 billion back into public services. When we allow the private sale of alcohol into grocery stores, that has an impact on the profit generated, and in the end, it has an impact on the amount of money going back into the public services that we all depend on and that we all need.
Right, just like the highway, just like 407 and other services that were bringing in revenue to the government. So the publicly administered programs bringing in revenue, which is then spent on the government programs that everyone uses. So when you privatize it, you remove that source of revenue. For those who are just tuning in, we're speaking with Olivier Lopez. He's an equity mobilizer with the We Own It campaign, which is a network of groups from unions backing it and from community organizations, non-governmental organizations, individuals, people that are involved in a campaign to push back against the wave of privatization that has been occurring in Ontario. And a thing that I keep seeing coming up in these discussions here when we talk about privatization is, yes, the companies sell themselves as being more efficient. But of course, anyone who's worked with a business or a contractor knows that it's in the best interest of private corporations to say that things are going to cost less than they are, or that they're going to happen quicker than they're going to. And then you sign up the private contractor, you sign up for a privatization. And of course, what happens? You end up with the cost overruns, and you end up with things taking longer than they're supposed to. You know, and I know there's examples of that in the literature, but it just means that there's such a big myth that the private sector is going to handle things automatically more efficiently than the public sector.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that's not the reality that we've seen in the examples that I've been providing. That's not the truth. Unfortunately, if we look at hydro is one of those elements that impacts every single one of us. And I've been to community forums and discussions. I've looked at the statistics around the privatization of hydro. By selling off 60% of Hydro One, the province is estimated to lose $500 million each year, according to the Financial Accountability Officer. So if you look at that, that was in 2016, $500 million. So 2017, it'll go up to $1 billion, and then 2018, $1.5 billion, and then 2019, it's going to go up to $2 billion, and so on and so forth. And if you look at the hydro rates have gone up 300% under private, and they were way, way cheaper under public rates in a public plan. So I don't understand why we would keep on doing this. And you hear in the community discussions, people who are working class, who've worked their whole lives and never, ever had an example of missing a hydro payment. They're hard working class people. And now they're struggling. They're having to choose between paying their hydro or having a little bit of, you know, social leisure, that it ultimately becomes important for their well-being. And all this stress of these ridiculous prices, it has an adverse effect on our community and the citizens of this community. And what does that do? That has an increased burden over time on our other infrastructure, like healthcare. People are so stressed out, they can't pay their bills, that they end up having increasing of medical problems and things of that sort. So we really need to take a deep analysis on the domino effect and the ripple effect of the privatization, and not just look at the simple solution or the simple argument of we need to balance the budget and, you know, corporations know how to do it better, or private businesses know how to do it better, or we need to eliminate unnecessary costs. A discussion I had with a board member for a community organization in Hamilton, we engaged in a very interesting debate and conversation. And in the end, he said, well, what are the costs to be running these businesses? I said, well, if we really look at the cost, if they're generating a profit and generating revenue, why are we so concerned about the cost? Because our focus shouldn't be on the profitability for private corporations. We should make sure that it's providing good quality services for the citizens of our community, whether you're referring to healthcare or whether you're looking at hydro and hydro costs, you know, or you're looking at your road maintenance and simple things like that. If under a private plan, there was one example that I looked at, and it doubled the amount of time just to get snow removal done. And logically thinking, organizations, private corporations, aren't going to want to spend more and more money on constantly plowing the roads they're going to wait until it's all done and do it once. Because every time you bring out trucks, that's costing more money in salting, that's costing more money in salaries, that's costing more vehicle maintenance. So it's a whole bunch of other costs that they want to try to reduce and eliminate. And at the expense of people's safety, because if you're waiting 4 hours rather than 2 hours to get your snow removed and you have an emergency, what type of risks are you being put in?
Yes, exactly. You see, the provision of consistent service across the province in snow removal or other services is not the same as being profitable. So the government is there to make sure citizens have a certain standard of access to services and utilities, but a private corporation, it can be very selective and because of the profit motive being involved. So, you know, as you pointed out, there seems to be, it's very illogical to make the focus on business being profitable and having opportunities rather than providing services to Ontario. And of course, the opinion polling that's been done by the campaign has shown that, you know, once they're presented with these deficiencies in private management of our utilities, you know, something like 72% of people think that privatization is the wrong direction to be going in. And I can see that. And I think it was very perceptive what you said about the Hydro One issue, where people for the first time in their life are literally choosing between buying food or having hydro and heating, you know, in their house. And we've seen those stories in The Spectator and in CBC and elsewhere, people calling in and calling their members of parliament. They cannot make ends meet because, you know, in order to temporarily balance books or bring in a temporary amount of money, you know, we've had a sell-off and now we're losing revenue and things are being affected by all sorts of forces that just did not occur before. So it destabilizes people and then, as you said, puts additional pressure on our medical system and so on if people are having difficulties as a result of not having enough food or not having heating or being stressed out by that situation. So you pointed out it's a domino effect. These issues are interrelated, and the more pressure you put on public services through privatization and the attendant problems, the more strain is put on Ontario's infrastructure generally. So I think that, I mean, is this what you tell people door to door? Do you have to go like door to door telling people this? How do you have these conversations?
Well, you know, the one thing that really resonates with everyone has been the hydro. Like I said, it's impacting every single one of us, whether you're, you know, middle class or low income. It has an extreme amount of, you know, when you get that bill every other month and you're like, my bill's double. It feels like, and you're looking at it and you're like, you know, I've never missed a bill in the last 30 years. And now you're like trying to figure out how are you going to do your numbers to pay your hydro, but what are you going to compromise in the end? So that's been a really good way that really resonates with our community. But it's just touching on the different areas of privatization, looking at the healthcare, looking at the sell-off of the ETR and the loss of revenue, looking at the LCBO, which people are completely unaware. Like, I strongly encourage anyone and everyone who's listening, do not shop at the grocery store for alcohol. That's just, you're affecting the amount of money that goes back into our public infrastructure that I depend on, that our parents depend on, but more importantly, that our children and our future generations are going to be depending on. And the infrastructure that was created historically by past generations of having such a great public service infrastructure has been a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. And I think, you know, it's our turn now for this generation to start taking a look at what's really going on that's going to impact us, impact our parents, but impact our future generations. And what do we want to leave? And what kind of legacy are we trying to create for our children?
Exactly. There's been a whole generation of people that have grown up having reliable access to public services. And you would think that they would want that same provision for their children. But instead, we're faced by decaying services, inconsistent services, cost overruns, time overruns, all sorts of things as things are handed to the private sector. The Hydro One, as you point out, is such a big example of perils of privatization. When you talk to people in the community about this, are you finding that there's any kind of shift in public consciousness on the issue?
I think people are already aware of the hydro costs. People don't necessarily automatically assume it's a result of privatization. They just look at, oh, rates are going up. But then when you start hearing about, oh, they sold off 30%, and after they sold off 30%, you saw rates go up, and then you see the new government try to create incentives to help alleviate the financial burden people are experiencing. And then I have an opportunity to share a little bit about a little bit of information, and then also give them the literature to look at on their own. So they can take it away on their own and really dive into the information that's being provided. Because me going door to door and engaging in a discussion is very limited, and we're all so overstretched. So it makes it very challenging to actually be able to understand it in depth. So a lot of the time I touch on certain topics like privatization of hydro, or looking at the sell-off of the ETR or the LCBO privatization alcohol sale, that it really starts to really resonate when you start looking at numbers and looking at different parts. It's not just healthcare. Now we're looking at the actual hydro, and you're looking at our road maintenance and hospitals. One thing I wanted to mention about hospitals that I found very interesting in our literature is the P3 hospital partnership.
Yeah, public-private partnership.
Yes, the public-private partnership. Royal Ottawa Hospital, under the public plan, they had 284 beds at $95 million. Private results were 188 beds at $146 million. So if you heard that correctly, you're losing almost 100 beds and you're paying $50 million more.
Yeah. You know, it reminds me of when the privatized clinics in Ontario, they were actually being given a subsidy to serve all the areas in Ontario, and then they decided not to cover the northern rural regions because it wasn't profitable, even though they were getting a subsidy. So you give them extra money to get the job done, and then you end up with less. You know, that must be frustrating. And as you say, when you talk to people with those numbers, they get it in their heads. And people know, because we've been all witnessing the decline in public services and the strain that's being placed in Hamilton, especially on our medical system, where Hamilton is bringing in so many patients and residents, and the nursing staff is so overstretched. And, you know, it's causing enormous problems on the front line there in the workplace. And, you know, that's what you're asking. You're asking nurses and doctors, RNs, RPNs, assistants to take on more and more of the burden as the whole system becomes P3, it's overstretched and changed and modified and so on. So it's a difficult situation to face, but there, you got a whole team of people working on these issues. And, you know, I wanted to know about that because obviously you can't be handling this all yourself. There must be, you know, more than a dozen. So how have you got this organized to get the word out there to the community?
Well, fortunately, OPSU has been great to deploy 28 mobilizers throughout Ontario on this campaign. After they deployed the 28 mobilizers, they deployed an equity mobilizing team and an Indigenous mobilizing team. In the equity team, there are three of us. I'm in Hamilton. We have another individual in Windsor and another individual in Brampton. And then we have the Indigenous mobilizing team as well. We're connecting with the Indigenous team as well. We're building solidarity. We're trying to work on initiatives to build solidarity between immigrants, refugees, and our Indigenous communities. A lot of the adversity and struggles that a lot of immigrants and refugees experience in their homelands prior to coming to Canada are a lot of the similar struggles that Indigenous communities are facing on the reserve, from the poor infrastructure, the lack of water, the poor housing, the lack of public services. You know, in many developing countries, they don't have this. And a very unique thing on this campaign, not only am I doing community outreach in Hamilton, by doing presentations, going door to door, doing pamphleting, doing leafleting, getting people to sign on to the petition, I'm also being given a very unique opportunity to have a platform to engage my Hispanic community, have the literature that's in English for the We Own It campaign translated into Spanish. But even deeper than that, I'm doing my own research and adding some of the research I did in university on the impact of privatization, and it really looks at neoliberal policies, which is to privatize, to deregulate, and to cut social services. And that's just the reality of it. And when you do research and you have an ability to resonate with immigrants and refugees who came here from other countries, who saw it firsthand, either they had no public services or the public services they had have been sold off to multinational corporations or foreign entities or the elites of that country, that it's impacted those individuals the worst and has resulted in a lot of the immigration into Canada and into Ontario due to the poor infrastructure. Fortunately, here in Canada, we have a great, great public infrastructure. And, you know, my passion behind it is to protect it and to build upon something that was historically created for us by the hard work of our past generations.
Yes, and, you know, as you pointed out, Latin America, the Global South often experienced privatization, neoliberalism first, like in Chile, and what little public services they had were eliminated, and then it came here. We've been reeling under decades of it, but people do fight back. People resist. People that have been affected by this come together and push back against these policies. And, you know, in the UK and even in the US, there's been this resourcing, bringing services back into the public sector at times, and a greater recognition of why that's important. And it's a smart strategy what you're doing, recognizing that Ontario and Canada is made up of diverse communities, people that have different experiences, but on the other hand, they're united by common problems facing privatization of their utilities. So that means that, you know, you can talk to different communities and you have different people from different walks of life who can reach out to different people and unite them around this particular campaign. And that's why it's valuable to have labor and community organizations doing things like that, and why it's good that, I guess, you know, the only other thing is that there are a lot of facts and figures being bandied about. People might want to know for themselves. They might want to understand what are the impacts of privatization, what's happened to Ontario medical clinics, research facilities, highways, hydro, and so on, because this is all measurable and it's been measured, and then your, you know, the campaign has stats on it. So where do people get information on the web or Facebook or wherever to learn about the We Own It campaign?
Well, there are so many ways to get involved in this campaign. We all have a different capacity of being able to get involved in this campaign. All our schedules are very busy. We're all pulled in so many directions, work, our personal lives. Options of getting involved in the campaign, simply you can go to weownit.ca and you can sign on to the campaign right on that page there. Other options is you can sign up to follow We Own It on Twitter, or even add them as a friend on Facebook. Other areas that individuals could potentially get involved is volunteer. Contact your MPP. Let them know that you're against privatization. You make that phone call, you leave that voicemail, the more people that let them know, the increase in the awareness, the increased amount of pressure that they will experience. You can also write a letter to them as well. So there are many options. Another option would be to contact We Own It. We're always looking to do presentations, set up literature tables, share information, attend community events, and engage in the conversation of the privatization of public services in order to gain an understanding of what's going on and, you know, to grasp what we need to do and share information. We need to engage it. Talk to your neighbor about it. Talk to your friends about it. Talk to strangers about it. You see the sign, it's a good opportunity to engage a conversation and get other people's perspective or share what you know and what you've learned. We also have like lawn signs. We have magnets for your bumpers. So there's a lot of ways to kind of, you know, get the word out there and create an awareness. You could even contact me by phone, 905-537-4879, or via email, ollie.lopez3@gmail.com. That is ollie.lopez3@gmail.com. I'd be more than happy to share information, do a presentation at a community event, or even just simply to share the literature with you. I'm more than happy to do that. I think this campaign is extremely important. The reason I got involved in this campaign, I've been born into social justice. I've been born into human rights. I'm passionate about labor. And I think if we don't do something about our public services and protecting them and changing the way our political parties look at our public assets, that we're going to lose them all. And once they're gone, it's going to be that much harder to get them back.
Well, it sounds like an exciting team, and I know the campaign has a lot of swag, like hats and shirts and stuff too. And you know, that means if you've got a union or a class or a church or something, you want to talk to people about privatization, and that means all these different facilities and utilities that we sometimes take for granted, and you know what's happening and you're worried, you can, you know, the We Own It campaign is out there, and they can send someone, you know, to your church or mosque or school and whatever, and you can have a speaker and learn about it and get people involved in the issues. So it's not like you can just sit, stand there alone and worry about it. There's actually, you know, people out there in a campaign. So that's great. So Olivier, thanks for giving us your time today. I'm glad people have the chance to hear about it, and they'll probably have the chance to hear more about it on this program. So we're looking forward to that, because there's people in this community that are involved in the struggle against privatization. It's not a struggle against something, but a struggle for something. And that's for reliable, safe, and adequate public facilities that are cost effective and that, you know, are managed by democratic systems to affect public policy. So we believe that's the best and ideal way to be provisioning public services and infrastructure. So Olivier, thanks again for being on the program with us today.
Brendan, thank you so much for giving me an opportunity to discuss such an important campaign and protect our public services from being privatized. Public equals better.
It was fun. Great.